mymac.com.
Nico, my cousin! Welcome to America! Come, check out the My Mac podcast with Tim Robinson with me. You will love it!
The next generation of radio. It's the MyMac.com podcast.
And it's been a big week for Mac users and iPhone owners. Brand new G3 iPhones announced, WWDC going on, but we're going to kick off the show this week with Sam Levin. Hello, Sam.
Hey, guys.
It's time for Cool Mac Picks.
Yes, lovely time for that special moment.
Did you like the beginning of the show this week? A little different?
Very different.
Yep, it's for anybody who's a big video game fan, you'll recognize the music and the voice from Grand Theft Auto 4. The guy who did the voice, his name is Jason Zumwalt, and he actually recorded that little podcast intro for us in the Roman voice that he uses in the Grand Theft Auto video game. So I thought it was really cool. I want to thank him. If you're a MySpace user, go to MySpace, do a search for Jason Zumwalt, Z-U-M-W-A-L-T, and you'll find him. I'll put a link in the show for anybody who's interested. Really cool, though. Kind of a tying into the biggest video game launch in the history of mankind right there. Pretty neat. So what do you got for us this week, Sam? What's going on?
Well, we might as well talk about Apple's WWDC. And I was at the keynote, as well as a few other of our folks. I think Lee, wasn't Lee there?
Yes,
I don't know.
I was.
Were you there, Lee?
Okay. Yeah, I got Lee up at 4 a.m.
Okay, yeah, so, but that's 4 a.m. California time. You're from the East Coast, so that's like 7 o'clock in the morning to you, so it's no big deal.
Yeah, that's why. But I want people to feel sorry for me.
Okay.
So WWDC kicked off where probably just over 5,000 developers descended upon Moscone West in San Francisco. And these developers are from everywhere. I mean everywhere. Russia, Latin America, United States, students. There are student developers there that are 15 years old.
Wow.
Of course – they started talking about this huge iPhone push and how many people are doing development. And that was really the biggest focus of the entire keynote. And Steve Jobs came out, really introduced the developers as, you know, that was really who was on stage more than anything. The first hour, they were demos of some of the top developers in both the enterprise space, which that is the big push for Apple, as well as iPhone gaming and entertainment. So, you know, they showed people like Sega. They showed people, I forgot who else that they showed. But it was nice to see that within a matter of weeks, they had one developer out of Spain develop a game in less than 2 weeks. And
it looks pretty impressive, too.
Very impressive. I forgot. It's called Digital Legends, and they're out of Barcelona. And, you know, they're using, obviously, the iPhone innards, which is the accelerometer. When you turn the iPhone, you can actually move the device or move the game just like you would with a joystick. So now the iPhone becomes your joystick.
Yeah, Cro-Mag Rally did that too. So when you turn the iPhone, you're turning the little Barney Rubble-looking car. Let me ask you, Sam. You've historically focused on cool products for Apple gear, including software for the Mac, cases for the iPhone, the iPod. What's the App Store going to do for you? I mean, how much money are you going to allot yourself to check out these cool new products when they come out for the App Store?
Well, I mean, how much money, you mean, am I willing to spend $50, $100 or something like that? Is that what you
mean? No, a budget. I mean, when you're starting to talk about the Cool Mac Picks, that's obviously going to include iPhone applications, iTouch applications.
Right.
how much are you personally going to be spending on some of these programs?
Well,
a total.
Probably about, I don't know, maybe upwards of 100. Now, remember, guys, that the prices are going to vary. Some of them are free. You can have your apps listed on the App Store for free. There's reports coming out now that there's going to be a limit between free and $999. I'm not sure if that's true, but and the games, I guess, are going to be probably sub $10, like $9.99. I believe that's the sweet
spot. Looks like the sweet spot, yeah.
Right. And of course, there's a number of different applications that are free, free utilities, free instant messaging clients, which is really great. And other clients like Twitterific, that's a Twitter client that will be, I'm sure, will be free. But, you know, I would say I'd limit myself to about 100, which is 10 games. That's a lot.
$100 a month.
No, not per month. I'm just saying 100 over the next, probably 3 months. It depends upon how good that game is. I mean, I want that, what is that marble game called? I forgot the name of it.
Enigma.
Is it Enigma? It's the one, it's like you move the marble around.
Oh, no, you're talking about Monkey Ball.
Monkey Ball.
So that's a game that looks a lot of fun, and you don't have to be a hardcore gamer. I think when the iPhone launches, meaning iPhone 2.0, the App Store, 3G, which I believe is going to be the same day, it's going to be the casual gamer that they're attracting to business. I don't think it's going to be hardcore at first, but I think that it will gravitate to that when they build, you know, really cool ways to access controls and make it easy for gamers to access those controls. But, you know, hardcore gamers want fast twitch games. I'm not sure this is a fast twitch device.
Now, did you hear from any developers that are looking forward to developing hardware that goes along with the new iPhone, the iPhone G3 or 3G? Case manufacturers,
right.
Peripherals, that sort of thing?
Right. Actually, that's a great segue, Tim, for Spec. Spec announced the day of the launch, or the day of the WWDC, that they're launching an entire lineup for the 3G iPhone. One of them is called Tough Skin. Now, Spec were the ones early on to really build cool iPod silicon skins and really nice skins. I mean, there's a lot of cheap silicon skins on the market. They've done a really nice rubber case. It's called Tough Skin for a reason. It's pretty tough and it's thick. And it's pretty cool. It's rugged. And this new 3G version flips at the bottom so you can dock it with your
iPod. Oh, nice.
So I think they've done a really nice job. I've been using their products for many years on the iPod. They also have this for the current iPhone. They're going to come out with this in the next, I would say, 2 to 3 weeks. So they're developing and shipping probably 3 to 6 different versions. They have an armor skin that they're going to be coming out with. That's beautiful, too. And that will probably come in clear as well. This one only comes in black. It's $34.95. There's an array of different manufacturers that are supporting the iPhone 3G, but Spec has been around for a while. They're tried and true, and they just make really great products. Now, also on the gaming platform, there's some really cool companies that we all know and love, and one of them is Freeverse. You guys know who Freeverse is, right?
Absolutely. We've had him on the show.
Right. Burning Monkey Solitaire, which is one of my all-time favorite. They are developing a whole new line of games. I'm not sure that particular game will be on the iPhone, but I asked the CEO, I said, hey, I really want Burning Monkey Solitaire with the monkey pops up and starts singing and stuff like that.
Yep. Great game.
They're going to come out with, I believe, 3 to 5 games at launch of the App Store. Now, also, they have a companion entertainment site specifically for Mac games called MacFun.com. So if you head there, it's specifically targeting the Mac casual gamer. So that's something that's kind of a little secret to the gaming community. Specifically, it's only Macs.
Yeah, it's surprising that's a great domain. They got a lot of cool content up there, but until you told me about it earlier in the day, Sam, I had no idea MacFun.com even existed. So,
right. Well,
you know, listeners of the show should really go check that out if you're a game player on your Mac.
Well, they focused really on Freeverse and Freeverse branding. They also distribute other companies' products. They distribute Comic Life. They distribute Pulp Motion. They distribute I don't know how many different developers' products because they have a pipeline into the U.S. North America market. They are fantastic gaming developers, and I suspect they're going to be really great iPhone gaming developers because everything is written from ground floor. They don't do a port of this stuff. They write it specifically for the device. And that's if you want to check more about what they're doing, just go to freeverse.com, and you'll see they list about what iPhone games they're going to be coming out with.
So what's on your agenda coming up here in the next couple of weeks, Sam?
Well, I will be attending, actually, the Music 2.0 conference, and I'm going to be it's in Barcelona. I'm going to be speaking regarding what new technologies are affecting the distribution of music and other types of products. And, of course, it's the Internet and things such as widgets, things such as social media and social networking tools, how people are disseminating their information. For instance, Twitter, that's one of these enabling tools that people are using to broadcast what they're doing. So I'm going to talk about that, show it. I'm going to show some videos on mashups and what, you know, how powerful the mashup scene is. Even though it's kind of been underground, it's gaining a lot of popularity. And this is specifically music-related issues. And as we know, record sales or CD sales, they're taking a dive as online music sales are increasing. So,
do you think mashups help the music industry at all, though?
No, that's precisely the point I'm trying to make is they're not addressing that because it's illegal.
Yes.
Legal to create a mashup because you're taking two different videos and or soundtracks, you're mashing them, creating your own.
Tell you what, though, some of the music that's really got me excited over the last couple of years have been some just extremely well-done mashups. I could think of one with The Who and the Beastie Boys that neither one of those songs really blew me away by themselves, but mashed together, it was just incredible.
Exactly. And actually, I'm on those types of sites on different social media sites that feature those. I've downloaded them. I think I'm going to be showing a comparison of the Pussycat Dolls video, and then the mashup version that mixes Gorillaz with their song. It is unbelievable, and I'm going to show side by side the differences between the two. Well, why can't users pay for that? Why can't they buy it? So,
or why can't the record companies allow it out in the public a lot more than they do as promotional material?
Well, there's copyright issues. There's controlling the content. I understand that's the old. So I'm not saying, hey, you're wrong and I'm right or we're right. I'm saying here's what people are doing. And by the way, they're getting this all free and you're not making a dime of revenue. So
yeah.
I'm going to talk about that and show it on iTunes or within Keynote. I might do a comparison side by side with QuickTime Video. It's phenomenal. I mean, I had a party last year, and I featured a bunch of mashups on a big projector. And, I mean, I'm happy to pay for it. Just give me the avenue, just like iTunes did for music. So, anyway, so those are some of the things I'm going to talk about, as well as widget technology. And, by the way, widgets are part of what we use called dashboard on the Mac system. Now they're coming to the iPhone. So
yeah, absolutely.
I'm excited about widget technology and how you can, you know,
making the transition to the iPhone.
Exactly. So I suspect many companies, AOL, big companies, Warner, all these companies will create small widgets so that you can go into that widget and you can find content and not have to go directly to the site. If you want to, you click on a link, you go to, you know, AOL.com, something like that. It's going to become big business. So those are some.
We won't hear from you next week. I take it then.
No, you will hear from me next week because
Ooh.
I'm going to call in from Barcelona.
Awesome.
So I thought we'd do that, a Spanish version.
There you go.
That's it.
Well, Sam, we appreciate you coming on this week and filling us in on the WWDC, some of the cool stuff that you saw, and we'll talk to you next week.
All right. Thanks, guys.
We got a jump to a segment with John Nemirovsky. He was also at the WWDC and had a couple interviews, so let's listen to those, and we'll be back with Guy Searle, Lee Gibbons, David Cohen, and me, Tim Robertson.
Thanks a lot.
We're at the WWDC 2008 Moscone West. This is John Nemo with the MyMac podcast, and we're with Matt Stevens. And who are you with, Matt?
I work for Allysoft, so it's actually my company. I develop a little iPhone application called Signal that lets you use your iPhone as a remote control for iTunes on your Mac or your PC, so you can drive your music in your house with it.
Is it already out, or is it on its way?
Yeah, I've been selling it since July as a web application, and now working on building it as a native version, and so kind of here to, you know, get some knowledge of the latest tips and tricks of how to build web apps and or how to build native apps rather, and see if I can make that migration easier.
Is it going to be available through the store?
That's the plan. We'll have to see what when Apple, you know, admits additional applications into the store and how that's going to end up working.
So tell us a little bit about your background and what brings you here to the conference.
I've been doing this kind of application on pocket PCs for 5 or 6 years, and it was just sort of a hobby, didn't really go anywhere. And when the iPhone came out, I thought, you know, this is the kind of hardware that this type of remote control needs. And that's when I started developing for the iPhone, and just sort of kept going with it since there, and it's been a lot more popular, and it's been a lot of fun to work on.
How much does it cost, and how do people find it if they're interested?
It's $24.95, and it's available at allysoft.com.
Let's spell that for them nice and slowly.
Allysoft.com.
Do you have any other programs or ideas in the works that you can tell us about?
There's some other ideas, but nothing I'm quite willing to share yet.
How many times have you been to the developer conference?
This is my second time.
What's it like as an attendee? None of us out in the audience have ever been there, so what's it like? Are the rooms crowded? Do the people next door to you have body odor? Is the food good? Can you see and hear okay? What's the culture like of the Worldwide Developer Conference?
Oh, it's definitely packed. I think they said there were over 5,000 people here. I mean, lines for everything. I think they said people started lining up for the keynote yesterday afternoon, and it started at 10 o'clock this morning. So it's definitely packed. Food is okay. I was at the Google conference here a couple weeks ago. They had much better food.
How do you decide which of the tracks and which of the conferences that you're going to attend?
That's a tough one. Sometimes, like this first day, it's pretty obvious. There's only certain tracks to go to. But starting tomorrow, sometimes you want to be in three places at once, and you just have to kind of pick what looks like the best to be there in person for. And Apple's nice enough to record everything on video and post it up on the iTunes store later, so developers who attend the conference can get access to that material afterwards.
Do you have to decide ahead of time and sign up for those conferences, or can you change your mind at the last minute, or if you're at something and it's boring, can you go into something else?
You can definitely move around. It's mostly a matter of where there's room available, because things fill up fast.
What's the quality of the presentation?
Apple does a very good job. It's clear that they put a lot of effort into it. They obviously have rehearsed it. You know, they're very good speakers.
Mm-hmm. And what would other people want to know about if they're considering coming to the conference in the future? How much does it cost, and do you get value for money?
It's about $1,300, and although some of the sessions may be a little high level for people who have read stuff online, the labs are invaluable because they have a bunch of Apple engineers here on site, and not just junior engineers, they're senior engineers, they're experts. And if you've got something you're developing something and you're running into a roadblock, they will sit down with you and work through that roadblock with you. They will help you figure out exactly what needs to be done to fix it, to give you tips for improving the performance of your application, give you tips on user interface, how to improve that in your application, and that's really where the value comes from.
Are you sitting down one-on-one at a computer with the developer with the software right there?
Yeah, they have a lab where they have a bunch of engineers, and when somebody's available, they'll sit down with you, and they'll basically work with you one-on-one until you get it fixed.
Do you also attend the Macworld Expo?
No, haven't gone to that one.
Well, we can tell you from MyMac.com and the MyMac podcast, that's something that you definitely want to follow next January. So we're looking forward to Matt Stevens from Allysoft. Tell us again the name of your product.
It's called Signal.
Signal?
Yep.
Are there other products called Signal that you had to compete with to get that name?
I don't know, but I'm the top hit for applications on Google, so I'm happy.
Very good. We wish you all the best, and thank you for the interview today at the Worldwide Developer Conference 2008 in June, Moscone Center West in San Francisco.
Thank you. It was a pleasure.
Okay, here we are at WWDC, and I've just ran into an old buddy and a longtime contributor of MyMac whose name is?
Dave Caceres.
And we were talking off mic. Maybe it even got recorded. We're not quite sure. But he's with Recall, R-E-Q-A-L-L. And just tell us here on the MyMac podcast once again, thank you for your understanding, what we might have missed in the first go-around.
We're working on an iPod iPhone application. Recall is a service on the internet for helping you remember things, and it uses a lot of voice input. So if you're on the go, you don't want to be typing anything, but you can say into your telephone, remember to get some eggs for breakfast tomorrow.
Do people need to pay for it?
At present, it's a free service. In the future, we don't know.
At the moment, is it an actual web at local application on your computer, or is it only on the web?
It's only on the web. There's a web app for the iPhone. There's a website, recall.com, with a Q. Mm-hmm. It works also on some other telephones.
Are you the inventor of this company? Are you the CEO?
I'm a contractor.
I see. So once again, you're a contractor.
Yes, I'm a contractor hired in to write user interface code.
So at least it's your primary area of expertise.
It is. It is. I'm working in cocoa again after spending 5 years keeping up my cocoa skills and sometimes wondering why I was doing it. But this is actually, career-wise, this is the most fun thing that has happened to me in decades.
Well, you've had a rough spell after Apple downsized and pretty much sent you out to pasture. And in the meantime, what sort of stuff have you been doing?
I've done some contract technical writing. And some personal writing projects of my own.
Good. Well, we're delighted to have you as part of our MyMac community. What are you personally looking forward to, David, at the Worldwide Developers Conference 2008?
The biggest thing that I'm here for is the laboratories, where I can go and talk to Apple engineers and find, you know, if I have something that's not working, I can say, look, is this your fault or mine? And get some useful information that way.
What's your opinion of the engineers themselves, having been in that milieu professionally for a long time?
Oh, I have the very highest opinion of them, and I particularly admire the iPhone organization, because they've done a magnificent thing over the last year or so.
Where do you want Recall, that's R-E-Q-A-L-L.com, where do you want that to be a year from now, both in January at the Macworld Expo and next summer here at the Worldwide Developers Conference?
Well, as a contractor, I can't really talk about that. You'd have to ask the CEO or the product manager.
Mm-hmm. Well, but do you expect to have a long relationship with this company?
That would be nice. I have a contract that extends until the end of June. But there's every likelihood that there'll be more work to do after that. And if not, I'll be in the position of saying I worked on a successful iPhone project.
Do you wish you were more in the CEO seat, or you're glad to be doing the engineering and the development side?
I wouldn't be a CEO for all the tea in China.
Now, for those people who know you from your sporadic but intense involvement in MyMac, the website, over the years, what's been your position as far as the evolution of MyMac? The videos, our coverage of the Macworld Expo, our tutorials, our cartoons, our blogs, our reviews, and our features, because you're both an insider and an observer.
I think my favorite features of MyMac are the blogs and the reviews. I'm not a podcast person. Mm-hmm. I like to read, because that way I can read at my own speed and so forth. Mm-hmm. And I love the blogs. There's so many interesting personalities there.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's a delight to see you again, and let's keep in touch, and please let us know how recall.com evolves and your participation in it extends.
Thank you very much. I will do that.
And we're back. Unfortunately, we're not joined by Guy Searle. He was having some connection issues or some microphone issues, but whatever the issue was, wasn't working out, so we had to drop him. But we're still left with Lee and David, thank goodness. Hello, Lee. Hello, David.
Hey, Tim.
Hello, hello.
So, Lee, you're actually in San Francisco. You've been at the Worldwide Developers Conference all week. Let's start with you. What's your impression of the show itself?
Well, the show is very similar to last year, but it just feels for everybody I talk to, it's definitely focused on iPhone this year. It feels like there's still a lot of enthusiasm for the Mac platform, but I see a whole bunch of new people from places I've, you know, every corner of the world coming here to really get into iPhone.
Yeah, you think that Apple's focus is going to move towards mobile devices such as the iPhone and iPod and that sort of market rather than the Mac in the future, or this is just the iPhone's time to shine?
I think there's a complement. What's kind of interesting, I think a lot of people don't understand, is the iPhone will actually be a bigger platform than Mac by sometime next year.
So you think so?
There's definitely a possibility if the iPhone 3G takes off in all 70 countries, there's a possibility there could be 45 million iPhones.
Yeah, that's going to be bigger than the Macintosh market share anyways. That's going to be pretty big. David Cohen.
Hello.
You're across the pond. What's your take on all the WWDCs going on from that perspective?
Well, it's been interesting, actually, in that obviously quite a lot of people know that I'm into Apple gear, and several people have commented to me on the 3G iPhone announcement. It got quite a lot of press coverage over here, and certainly people here are very pleased that, firstly, the price will mirror the US dollar price, so it's going to be available from O2, the UK carrier, at £99, which is pretty much what you would pay if you were to go over to the States and buy one in dollars, which is quite rare for us. We normally have to pay a bit of a premium. And secondly, our carrier is providing the phone with the same plans that were available on the existing iPhone. There's been no price increases. And also with the subsidy, if you pay enough for your plan, you actually get the phone for free.
Wow.
So all in all, I think it's going to sell absolutely gangbusters over here.
So dare I ask, are you going to upgrade your current phone to iPhone 2?
I'm a little bit conflicted on that at the moment because I only bought a 16-gig iPhone about 2 months ago. And I'm very happy with it, you know. And obviously the iPhone 2 will run perfectly well on that iPhone. I just won't have the new 3G and GPS facilities. So where my current iPhone is a US model that's been unlocked, certainly if I do decide to buy one, I will buy one with a contract over here so that I get full access to the 3G network. And I'm just going to try and decide over the next few days whether I'm going to do that or not. The problem I have is that I have to change my phone number if I do that because I have to get it from O2. And that means changing my business cards and changing my numbers at work, which is somewhat inconvenient.
A pain.
Yeah, it's a pain, but I don't know, it might be worthwhile. Probably when I see the phone actually in real life, that will probably guide me towards doing that.
Well, in the United States, we do have a new thing that came out about maybe 2 years ago where you can take your phone number with you. They don't have that in the UK?
Yeah, they do, but unfortunately, my company, they own the number. They don't want people pulling the numbers out in case they leave the company and take all their business contacts with them, so they won't let me port the number our way. So,
do you have to pay for your cell phone?
They pay for the service through the business. So I don't.
So couldn't you have both? You have two iPhones.
I suppose so, but I don't really want to carry two.
I hear
so,
you.
I've not thought about that really.
Lee, are you going to buy the new iPhone or are you going to stick with the current one?
I'm definitely some of the new features like GPS. 3G is just definitely a swap phone thing. I'm just trying to figure out what am I going to do with my other two phones.
Yeah, I know exactly what you mean. I'm thinking the 3G network coverage isn't the greatest where I'm at, so I don't know how much of a benefit that's going to be for me. I've already got a GPS unit, although it would be nice to have one device rather than multiple devices. But, you know, I spent $599 for my iPhone, and it just seems to be that to swap this out for a $199 phone or even a $299 if I went with a 16 gig. And honestly, 16 gig sounds really, really appealing to me rather than the 8 gig. I don't know.
You can buy white.
I could buy yours.
They have whiteboards here for developers just to write messages and, you know, to each other. And I see a guy putting up a thing here that says, looking for secondhand iPhones, offering $100. So,
wow. There's been a lot of speculation that the market for the first generation iPhones is just going to drop through. I don't know if that's going to be the case or not. I think there's still going to be a lot of demand for the first generation iPhone because other than GPS and 3G, there's really no difference.
And the other thing is that you can, there's a lot of those floating around that are unlocked or can be unlocked, so you can run them on other networks. And of course, it does appear that AT&T and Apple have taken steps to tighten up the process so that it's going to be more difficult to take the iPhone 3G and run it on another network.
Yeah, it looks like they're trying to get rid of the exactly that segment of the population who's unlocking the iPhone and using it on Sprint or what have you.
Yeah.
How successful do you think that's going to be, Lee?
I don't know. I think it's a tough thing to battle people who are intent on doing something a different way. I think they should just kind of embrace it and let it happen if it does happen. But I'm sure their partner AT&T really kind of wants to put a little more uniformity to the whole process there.
Well, yeah, I think you're right.
They're trying to protect their subsidy. Obviously, the reason that the phone is cheap is that they're paying the difference between the retail price and their price to Apple, and they want to make sure that people don't use that subsidy and then take the phone off network. So I don't blame them for wanting to do that.
Yeah, and I'm definitely sure you could probably buy a $499, $599 phone without the subsidy.
Yeah, well, we'll have to see when it comes out. I'm conflicted. I kind of want the new one, but you know, it's got that plastic back on them now, and I really kind of like the look of the first generation with the metal back. But I don't know. I've always keeping it in a case, so it really doesn't make any difference.
Well, you know, one thing, Tim, I heard that may sway you is I heard the plastic back allows a lot better radio transmission.
That would be nice. So, that would be something that I'm interested in.
So a lot of people said that calls sound clearer. They're getting a lot better range. Everything just is a lot better.
I'd like to find out if the volume, so I can actually hear the person I'm talking to, is better in the new iPhone, because that's probably been my biggest complaint about the iPhone. If I'm holding it up to my ear, I've got the speakers going, I can't hear as well as I could on a cheap flip phone that I had for 4 years. You know, I had to put headphones on to really hear. If it's an important phone call, I'm grabbing headphones on the iPhone every time.
Yeah, go ahead, David.
They did say in the keynote that they had improved the audio quality, so hopefully volume is part of that.
Yeah, our sister company, I guess, the folks over at Tuwa, the unofficial Apple weblog, said they sat down with it, and they said the audio quality's definitely improved.
That would be a big reason that I would upgrade. I don't know what I would do with my current iPhone, though. Maybe I would give it to my wife, but she doesn't seem to have a lot of desire to have one. She just looks at it and goes, I just want to be able to make phone calls.
Well, with some of the new apps, she may be really interested in moving up.
I would hope so. I try to get her into tech more and more and more, and it just really doesn't happen. I mean, she played Indiana Jones Lego the other day with my daughter for like 2 hours, and I couldn't believe it. My wife's actually playing a video game that's not, you know, bowling on the Wii or something like that, so that was pretty cool. One of the other things that happened at the WWDC was the Apple Design Awards, and we want to congratulate Lee and his company AOL because you guys won Best iPhone Entertainment App for AOL Radio.
That's true. We are very, very happy. It was our first we've submitted in the past, but this is our first Apple Design Award. So winning it in a brand-new category, and if you look at it, all teams had only about 6 weeks to actually develop an application. It's just a testament on how easy it is to develop iPhone apps.
Now, do you guys have screenshots of that application up anywhere?
Yeah, actually, if you go to we do have. If you do a search, or if you go to AOL's corporate site, corp.aol.com, you will see a screenshot.
Corp.aol.com. I put too many dots in there. I hate when I do that. corp.aol.com. I'm going there right now. Oh, there it is. Oh, that's a very nice-looking application, too. Kind of the black background, and really blends in well with the iPhone.
Yeah, especially with Apple's new design motif. Black is the new white, I guess. I'm not sure what they
say. I guess. I don't know. The new iPhones, you can get a white one now.
Yeah. But
I like the black, though.
With all the album art and things like that, black allows the more important things like the metadata and the album art to really stand out.
Yes, absolutely. And I noticed that with my Drive Plus Play, if it's nighttime and the background is black, I can really see that album art. But if it's during the day and the background is white, the art kind of bleeds out and doesn't look as good. So
yeah.
talk to us about this application, because I am a big fan, not just because you work for AOL and, you know, I'm trying to suck up because AOL is not sending any money this way. I found AOL Radio because of a article John Nemirovsky wrote up at MyMac.com a couple years ago. And I thought, oh, I'll give that a look, because he just gave it a glowing recommendation, and I got hooked on it. There's a lot of channels on there. I was finding music that I forgot all about. It gave links directly to, I think it was at the time, I know iTunes is one of the links, so you can actually go to iTunes and buy the song that you're listening to.
Yep.
It would show the song that's coming up. I mean, it was just a really great application. I still use it quite a bit, not as much as I used to. Because of my situation, I'm not at client's place and, you know, that sort of thing.
Yeah.
But it was one of those things that I always wished I could take it with me, because I don't need satellite radio if I had AOL radio, because it's doing everything that I want it to do, including comedy.
Yeah.
So now, on the iPhone, this is going to work if I'm not on a Wi-Fi network as well?
Yeah, it's we do a whole bunch of cool things. We actually use some of Apple's core technologies, like Core Location Framework. And we use some additional Cocoa Touch frameworks to automatically go between high and low bandwidth streams. So we're going to make it so it seamlessly goes between you. People like you, Tim, I think will notice the sound difference, but at least you could keep your music going if you're in a lower bandwidth area, like 3G is not there or Wi-Fi. You'll be able to still listen to the streams.
So what's the difference in bit rate on the high and the low? Like 32 if it's low and 128 if it's high? Or?
Well, we're still working with CBS on that. It's not an officially we've launched AOL Radio with CBS Radio as a beta. Just if you go to the radio.aol.com, you could take a look at the desktop version that runs in a browser. And
yep.
But we're still working with CBS on some of the technical issues on the back end.
So a lot of this, people are going to be able to listen to their local stations.
Yeah, and one thing that's beautiful about having a mobile product, we could take advantage of iPhone's core location framework. We'll find out where you're at, and if you're visiting, say, San Francisco for a computer conference, it'll show you all the local stations.
Yeah. Oh, that's awesome. So we can catch up on what the weather's going to be like, where we're at, and that's pretty cool.
Yeah, especially with sorry, David, go ahead.
Sorry, Lee, I was just going to ask, is that just U.S. stations that you offer through there?
Yeah, right now we're only offering U.S. stations, everything within the CBS radio network, along with 200 stations at AOL programs, which are
right.
not local stations. They're more, you know, like we have all Green Day, all Pearl Jam station, you know, all
right.
kinds of
things. I always like the all 80s, and I love the comedy because you guys didn't censor anything. I mean, this was, if it's Chris Rock that I'm listening to, it's Chris Rock. There's no beeps, so there's no silent parts and the naughty bits. I mean, I loved it. It wasn't catering to the lowest common denominator, assuming that everyone's listening to it is 12, so they're going to have to censor it.
And if people,
I loved it. I thought it was great.
Yeah, and if you really think about it, we now play like, you know, K-Rock in L.A., WFAN AM in New York. So we have sports and news, a lot of channels we didn't have before. So
podcasting.
Yeah. And
tell them to put podcasting in there.
You could.
I'll host it.
Yeah, definitely. So you can start looking at it as almost an FM tuner for your iPhone.
Now, do you have to have an AOL account to use this on your iPhone? Because I know not every iPhone user is going to have an AOL account.
Well, actually, for AOL Radio, you just have to click it and launch it. There's no authentication.
So you don't have to sign into any AOL network or anything. It's just an application. It's a radio on your iPhone.
Yeah, it goes with that, you know, AOL's new approach to open standards. We want to get our customers to our content as quick as possible.
Awesome.
Excellent.
It looks like a great application. It's going to be free, I heard, right?
Yeah, definitely free, and we're looking to launch right at the time the App Store launches.
I guarantee I'm going to buy it. I'm going to download it as soon as my iPhone updates to 2.0, because that's an application I actually will use a lot. It's going to introduce me to music that I probably haven't heard before, or remind me of stuff that I actually want and go buy it. But this is nice because, to me, I was wondering at first, well, how's content creators going to feel about it? But it's just radio.
Yeah.
You can't record it on the iPhone. I mean, it's like radio.
Yeah, our partner CBS is thrilled. And, you know, it's just one of those signs. I know we haven't been the best software developer on the Mac platform in the past 5 years. But in the past 12 months, the commitment on the Mac platform is unbelievable. And you'll start to see more and more things come out of AOL that I think customers really like. And hopefully, you know, every year we're up. We're in contention for an Apple Design Award.
Well, I think that's a good first step. And, of course, you guys are going to have AIM on the iPhone as well.
Yeah, we're looking forward to getting that out, too, at the launch of the App Store.
I wish that Apple would have shown this AOL radio up on stage. That would have been cool. Maybe they figured, well, they were up there the first time. But they let Sega up there again. Come on.
Yeah, it would have been great if Steve or Scott Forstall would have showcased us. But we're really excited to be an Apple Design Award winner this year.
Some of the other winners this year, let's see, Flow won as a runner-up, and Squirrel won as the best student winner. Let's see, Graphics and Media runner-up, Photomagico, and Graphics and Media was ScreenFlow. I've heard a lot about that ScreenFlow, and of course we talked about that on the show a couple months ago.
That is an amazing app.
And if we did more screen type of tutorials up at MyMac.com, we would definitely be using that. So any staff member listening to the show or somebody else out there that's thought about, maybe we'll get into doing some tutorials. Putting that notice out there. best game was Guitar Hero 3 for the Macintosh, which is kind of anticlimactic. I mean, you know, I own Guitar Hero for the PS2. Unfortunately, it doesn't play on my PS3. That's the only reason I still have a PS2 in my living room. I have one of those little slim ones.
Yeah.
And it's just for Guitar Hero because I can't play the old guitar on the new PS3. I don't know. Does anybody want to stand in front of their Mac with a plastic guitar?
Well, I
don't know.
I mean, Guitar Hero is a really fun game. I appreciate that just from the fact that they have ported the game to the Mac, because I think it's important that, you know, for the platform, that these big games do to end up on the Mac as well. Because
Command & Conquer 3 was the runner-up, by the way, which I reviewed a couple months ago. It's a fun game.
It's a fun game, yeah, exactly. So,
but Guitar Hero 3, here's an idea. Make Guitar Hero 3 for the iPhone. Now, how do you do that? You also have this little neck thing. You remember the review Chad Perry did of the touch holder thing?
Yeah, the thought out.
From Thought Out. Have something
called
like that for the iPhone, so you can see your iPhone maybe, you know, a foot away from your face, that's running Guitar Hero, and you got your little plastic guitar.
You can rock out anywhere. You've got a multi-touch screen, so you would...
Yeah, they have something like that for the DS, but I don't know. How do you... Because you have to see a visual representation of what you're supposed to push, right?
Yeah.
And if you're holding it like a guitar, how do you do that with an iPhone?
Oh, you wouldn't be able to hold it like a guitar.
Piano Hero, maybe?
Yeah. Maybe.
Keyboard
that's
Hero.
Keyboard Hero, yeah, exactly.
You could do something. Well, I don't know. I guess I just go up to my the notes, because I actually covered the event live with David was there, and we were posting constantly up at mymac.com. And what was the name of that music application?
Was it
Band?
Band. It sounded amazing, because we were listening to the audio stream.
Right, and I went and watched the keynote afterwards, and it looked really, really cool.
Yeah, that is one of those game changers. Those guys at Cal Music just blown away at the quality of the sounds that came out of there.
I couldn't believe it. The guy's playing some Beatles, and it really sounded like it. I thought, holy smokes, how are they doing that? I didn't catch how much that's going to be, but I think that's going to be another one that I'm going to buy. My fear is that I'm going to go through a lot of money in the next 12 months buying some of these applications for the iPhone, and yet I only have an 8-gig iPhone. So there's another reason that maybe a 16-gig iPhone is a purchase that I'm going to have to make. In fact, I'm starting to see a need for a 32 or a 64-gigabyte iPhone at this point.
But you know what's amazing too, Tim? These apps are really actually quite small. After you get them compiled and put on the iPhone, you're looking at apps that, you know, maybe a megabyte, that do a lot more than you would ever think they would have to.
Yeah, but like this Band, it will record you, so it's going to need some hard drive space to record that.
Yeah, definitely. But
I'm wondering if a program like that, if I record myself playing this game, when I plug it back into my Mac, can I get that sound file off of it? That would be really cool.
Yeah, that definitely would be interesting. Yeah.
Let's see. Some of the other things that were announced was Mobile Me. This is going to replace .Mac, and I know Sam Levin was on the show earlier, and he's having major problems with .Mac right now because he hasn't been able to send mail through .Mac for like 2 weeks. And trust me, I hear about it every time I talk to Sam. I don't use .Mac to send or receive mail. I do get some mail. My .Mac account is My Pictures. It's a horrible screen name, but when I first set it up, I thought that this was going to be a name of one of my websites under .Mac, and iTools, I guess it was at the time. And so I wanted that just to be called My Pictures, and that became my .Mac screen name forever and ever and ever, which I hate. But I get mail through it, but nobody knows that address until now. I don't use .Mac for mail, but with this mobile me, I'm starting to look at maybe this is going to be a huge improvement over .Mac, which we all knew was eventually going to come, was very much needed. What do you think, Lee? What do you think about mobile me? What's the most exciting to you about this?
Well, you know, I've been a iTools and .Mac subscriber since the first day, and my whole family uses it. We got the family pack, and I think mobile me's I think the biggest thing is the ability to push out contacts, calendar, and email over the air.
Yeah,
that's the big thing, because right now I spend a lot of time. I'll be in a meeting, and I do a sync from my Exchange server to my iPhone, and I have to do it through a cable. And sometimes people put something on my calendar, and I'm like, ooh, I didn't get that yet because I didn't sync up yet.
Yeah.
So I think this is going to be a revolutionary thing, and I think there's going to be a bridge that a lot of people are going to have. I use it for business and I use it for personal. So my iPhone's now going to be able to bridge both of those worlds.
I like the fact that it's going to also sync multiple Macs as well, not just my iPhone, because if I'm in a business meeting and stuff, I almost always have my laptop.
Yeah.
And heaven forbid I added something to my iCal at home and I didn't sync it with .Mac, and then I get to the business meeting and it's not there. I've run into that problem more than once. So with this push, it's just going to be there the next time I fire it up.
Yeah.
That's very appealing to me.
It's going
to
simplify everything.
Yeah.
Yes.
Remember, of course, it also syncs with Windows machines. So
yes, and that's going to be huge as well.
Exactly. I mean, many of us, I have this problem at the moment, is that, if you have a Windows PC at work, which you have to use, particularly, you're running Outlook and you've got stuff in there. At the moment, I've been using Entourage to sync stuff from Exchange, my calendar and my contacts in particular, up to .Mac, so I can then sync those back down to my iPhone. But it doesn't really work that well. Entourage, particularly in the latest version, is not brilliant. And I've ended up with some really weird stuff going on in my address book, for instance. And of course, this will eliminate all of that. And you also get a web interface to all this stuff. So it actually, when it's up on the .Mac servers, you can actually, you can use it properly. They've got these really nice Web 2.0 applications that mean you can go onto the website and access the data as if you were sat at a Mac using iCal or using an address book. So I think that's really, really strong. I mean, what was your impressions of that software, Lee?
Oh, my gosh. Looking at the Web 2.0 interface that they put together, all the Ajax and the quality of how clean the interface is, I think a lot of people will be completely satisfied that it's not a desktop app, but it'll act like one.
Yeah.
I kind of like the whole take a picture with your iPhone and it automatically updates to your, the website, your pictures online. I thought that was great.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's something I had with Envy. Some of my BlackBerry friends had, they upload their photos to Flickr. I'm just like, I can't wait till I get something where I could just, because, when I'm traveling here, I like taking photos and showing my kids, places I've gone, what I'm doing.
Right.
It'd be great, because right now I have to attach my emails, and it just becomes difficult for people who don't have iPhones.
Yeah, exactly. I saw that, and I was kind of depressed because I had an idea for a business that never got off the ground because my partner kind of bailed on me.
Yeah.
But it was something very similar that you would take a picture. And this isn't quite the same thing. My idea combined that with Twitter. Mm-hmm. But that was kind of the idea. You take a picture, you hit a button, and it goes up on your website. And when you get home, you can also, or on your iPhone, you can also see everybody else's picture that you subscribe to. Just like Twitter, except for with pictures. I think this just pretty much killed that business idea.
there's actually a hidden benefit. A lot of people don't know that you're getting 20 gigabytes of space now. And I was just at my sister's house. She lives over in Livermore. And, of course, whenever I go to a party, I do tech support for any of her friends and my friends. And person, they had a hard drive fail on them, and they lost some photos. So this may be another secret way for people to back up things.
Yeah, not with a little amount. I mean, 20 gigs sounds like a lot, mm-hmm. but I've got more pictures already than that. Although it probably wouldn't hurt me to trim that down a little bit, because there's a lot of stuff that I really don't need immediate access to in iPhoto. That might be a good application that somebody could write the ability to see your pictures as a thumbnail, but it's on removable media, and if you want to, you know, click it and see the full size, please, you know, put this DVD in.
But one good
that would be nice.
Yeah, one good thing, you know, people who publish photos of the Mobile Me Gallery, those are probably their better photos, than the ones they really like. So if they had a failure somewhere, at least they would have some left over.
Do you think, though, that that Flickr may be a little bit too entrenched for Mobile Me to really pick up any real good users that way? Because I got to imagine that Flickr's probably working on an application.
Yeah.
Maybe not. It's Yahoo, so who knows? But
I don't think they are, because, you know, really, since Yahoo bought Flickr, they've not done an awful lot with it.
I don't think they know what to do with it.
Yeah. And you look at what Apple have done with these Web 2.0 apps, and then you look at what Adobe are doing with Photoshop Express, which is an online version of Photoshop. And you can see, you know, maybe next year's version of iLife will have online components where actually it's all up in the cloud as well. And so you operate your photos on your iDisk and your 20 gig of storage, but the actual application you manipulate and edit them with is also up on the server and is not a local copy of iPhoto at all.
Yes. Let's take a quick break and mention that our sponsor for this podcast is Otherworld Computing. One of the things they got going on right now, you can save $20 on a copy of Drive Genius. Do you guys use Drive Genius?
Saved my backside about 2 weeks ago, that.
Did it?
Yeah, I was having some very odd problems with my Power Mac, and you know, I tried to run a disk permissions repair on it because I thought I might have a permissions problem, and the permissions repair would not complete.
Permissions, by the way, on the Mac OS 10 is very rarely the problem. Everybody runs it, but it really doesn't do anything unless you're having actual permission problems, and that doesn't usually happen too often.
I was having things where, you know, preferences within applications would not take, and sometimes I was having to re-enter passwords and settings that should have been saved in the application. And so I thought to myself, well, you know, if the preferences files are corrupt or there's a permissions problem with them, that might be it. But as I say, by trying to run that permissions repair, I found that I actually had a more fundamental disk problem because the permissions repair wouldn't complete. And, you know, I then tried to run Disk Utilities to run a repair on the volume, and that wouldn't work either. So I immediately turned to my DVD of Drive Genius, booted up off that, and left that running on the machine. And sure enough, after about 2 hours of processing, it brought the machine back, and all the problems were fixed. So,
do you use Drive Genius Drive Genius at all, Lee?
Yeah, I actually have a collection of every single thing that could try to resurrect hard drives. Since I spend a lot of time,
so do I.
I try to help people, and you know, I never found like one tool that does everything. So I collect everything.
Yeah, that let's see, Drive Genius is up there, and the other one that I use is Disk Warrior. Those are the two programs that I find. If those two can't fix it, it usually can't be fixed.
I refer them over to the drive saving people.
Yes, yeah. And say, hey, break out that checkbook, because those places are not cheap.
Yeah.
But Drive Genius is from ProSoft Engineering, good friends of ours. We actually, they sponsored us last year at the Macworld Expo. We did the Apple quiz from their booth. You were there for 2 days, weren't you, David?
I was, yeah, and it was that quiz was a lot of fun.
That was a lot of fun, and it was really fun to work with ProSoft Engineering, really good people.
Yeah.
Drive Genius 2.0 is compatible with G4, G5, and Intel Mac systems. So if you've got anything that falls into that, and I got to figure that 99.9% of the people listening to this podcast has at least one of those machines, pick up a copy of Drive Genius. It just may save your butt. And if you're an IT manager, because the regular $79.99 version that Otherworld Computing is selling right now on sale, that's $20 off. That's for one machine. You can get for $188 an unlimited use copy, so you can use it for all the machines that you may manage. So that's a good deal as well. That's something that I'm probably going to have to... I've still got the first version. I got to get off my butt and get version 2.0. I really do.
Yeah, they've just updated the boot disk, actually, so it works better with Leopard. So,
yes.
Yeah, it's pretty good.
So that's our little commercial for Otherworld Computing. Check them out. I'm going to have a direct link to that deal on their website. So just go up to My Mac Podcast number 188 at the My Mac website, and you will find a direct link to Drive Genius 2.0. Buy it. It's worth the money. It really, really is. So anything else going on with you guys before we cover what's going on up at the MyMac website?
Well, the only thing I'm doing is buying a round of drinks for my engineers.
Yeah, they deserve it. They deserve more than one round.
It'll probably be a couple.
Do you get a statuette or something, Lee?
Well, you guys get computers, don't you? You guys get like a couple MacBooks?
Well, yeah, there's two 17-inch MacBook Pros. There's a couple of 30-inch cinema displays, which everyone's drooling over. But the two developers that built we have a nice even number this year. So we have two developers who worked on the AOL radio product. So we're just figuring out how they're going to do the taxes, I guess.
You guys should pick up the taxes for them. I mean, geez, you guys can afford that? What, probably $600 total?
Yeah. Depending on what their retail prices are.
So, but the actual engineers who built it, they're going to get the prizes, though.
Yeah, I just really want to do a shout out to Ron Anderson and Dan Gilliam, the two of our most senior Cocoa developers.
Ron and Dan.
Yeah, Ron and Dan.
Bring them on the show sometime, man.
Yeah, actually, I was trying to get them a show, but they are sitting in a session right now, so I was going to try to get them out here, but they really wanted to go to this one session.
You're actually at the Moscone Center right now.
Yeah, I'm in Moscone West up on the second floor and where everybody's charging up their MacBooks.
So there's a lot of people around you right now?
I would say there's about 200 people in this room right now.
So if you yelled out, say, hey, does anybody want to be on a Mac podcast? Give it a shout. See if anybody will come over.
Well, most
have a lot of fun with it.
Most of the people here
are sleeping.
Well, there's a lot of people sleeping, so I'm trying to keep it down as much as I can.
Yell out. Say, hey, who wants to be on a Mac podcast for 5 minutes? Let's see if you can get anybody.
Let's have a whoop.
We're putting Lee on the spot. He's a notoriously shy guy. He doesn't really want to do it, I could tell.
Hey, you know.
Say, who wants to be on the podcast?
Hey, you guys. Anybody here want to
talk? He's doing it.
Anybody wants to talk for a couple minutes? Sure.
All right. Yeah, I think I found some folks. Are you guys from Flipside 5? Oh, yeah. My kids love your tic-tac-toe game. We've been playing the web. All right. I have, looks like, Bill Dudney from Dudney.net.
Hi, this is Bill.
Hey, Bill. How are you doing?
I'm great. How are you?
I'm doing well. My name's Tim Robertson. You're on the MyMac.com podcast.
Excellent.
I just made Lee, he's a regular host of the show, and I just made him yell out to anybody close by. He didn't want to do it, so.
There we go. Cool.
So what are you doing at the WWDC? What's your product, man?
I am an author. Right now I have a couple iPhone games that'll be out on July 11th that I'm converting from the web apps that we have. I also have a book on core animation. Core Animation for Mac, OS X, and iPhone. And I have a screencast called Core Animation Screencast where I teach people about core animation. And then I'll also have...
Core Animation Screencast.
Yeah.
Okay, I gotcha.
Both of those are through the Pragmatic Bookshop.
Bill Dudney.
Dudney.
Okay, I'm... How do you say it? Dudney.
Yeah.
Like a gotcha. Bill, I'm looking at your website now, and your games look really, really cool.
Oh, cool. Thanks. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm looking up there right now. So which ones are you going to be posting?
The first one that we're porting is Dot Game. That one got staff pick, which was really cool, and it's been really successful. I think we've had 500,000 plays since late March when we posted it on the website. So,
wow.
Yeah, so that one's really cool. After that, I have a puzzle game that we don't really have on the web because it's too much of a pain in the neck to do in JavaScript. So we've got that one implemented, and it's pretty much ready to go. But I think I've decided after my UI consultation with the guys downstairs that I'm going to change the metaphor. So now I have to go rewrite it. I haven't slept much since I had that talk.
I can imagine. So what's the iPhone going to do for you?
Well, I'm hoping it's going to make me independently wealthy.
Only because you got on the show here, man, and everybody, all of our listeners are going to hear about
it.
So that's going to do it right there, man.
There you go. Perfect. It's so much fun to develop for. I'm an old NextStep guy, so I did a bunch of NextStep back in the late 80s and early 90s, and then I got sucked into corporate IT doing Java stuff, and that was... you know, it was cool. There was a lot of fun stuff, and I did a lot of fun stuff while I was there, but I love being back on OS X, and it's just fun.
Does it feel more like a Next machine or a Mac machine to you still?
You know, there's a lot of it. When I'm doing AppKit, I feel like I'm back on Next, and then when I do, like, core animation or whatever, then I definitely feel like I'm on a Mac.
Do you do anything on the PC as well, or just you're more of a Mac guy?
Just a Mac guy now. I pretty much fully converted, except for when I was on client sites about 4 years ago. So my whole family is now Macs. All my kids are on Macs, and my wife is on a Mac. And so,
can you tell us pricing on your games?
So the Dot game is probably going to be $1.99. Moncala is probably going to be 99 cents. This puzzle game I'm working on, I'm thinking $3.99. So I'm going to sort of like try to hit a lot of the price points, less than $4.99, but a lot of the different price points so that I can sort of.
So you're looking at the average user who it's just going to be an impulse buy because who can't pay $1.99 for a quick game?
Exactly. And, you know, I mean, the Dot game is really aimed at kids, right? So you're sitting at a restaurant and, you know, your daughter is saying, "Daddy, I'm bored," or whatever. You just grab the Dot game for 99 cents and she can play it as often as she wants on the phone, right? So some of the more sophisticated stuff, we have a lot of we have two apps that we want to build that are much bigger that'll probably be more, you know, I don't know if they're going to be more than 10 bucks, but they'll be more, and they're not really games, they're more thinking stuff. And anyway, so those, when they're ready, they'll be more expensive. But initially I'm going to shoot for the low end just because they're, you know, these are casual 5-minute games.
It looks really cool.
Oh, thanks.
And I'm looking at your website right now. You do a lot of writing as well. We should probably hook up after the podcast here sometime and just check us out at mymac.com.
Okay.
And get a hold of me. My name's Tim Robertson. I actually published the site.
Perfect. Okay.
You look like you got some really cool stuff up there, and we'd like to get some more information from you sometime, get you more on the show, maybe give you a good like half hour segment so we can go through all your stuff.
Oh, I'd love that. Yeah.
Hey man, I hope that you at those prices, I know I'm going to be buying some of these programs.
Fantastic.
Hopefully a couple more million will, let's say 1.5 million. That way you'll at least be a millionaire.
Oh yeah. Let's hope, buddy. I tell you, if I do, I will be doing backflips.
Well, when you figure Apple's easily going to reach 10 million iPhones this year.
I know.
With the $199 price point, I got to imagine that's probably going to be closer to 20 million by December.
Yeah.
Every one of those phones is going to have the opportunity to click a button and see your program.
Isn't that cool? Like, I just, that, it's just so, it's like game changing for indies. Like, it's just so cool.
Well, you're on the same level playing field as EA.
I know, isn't that nuts? It's so cool.
You've got a game for $1.99, and someone looks at the EA or the Sega game for $9.99. Well, they got a little bit of money in their PayPal account, which is linked to their iTunes account, and I could spend $2 for a game.
Yeah.
I mean, I think that you're going to at least be able to buy a new car this time next year.
I sure hope so. So, yeah.
Well, good luck, Bill.
Well, thank you very much.
We really appreciate coming on the show, man.
Ah, absolutely. And I'll make sure I send you an email.
Cool.
Take care. Bye.
Thanks.
Hey, Tim.
Hey.
Hey, I got Michael Sanford from Flipside 5. They make a pretty cool tic-tac-toe game that my kids love.
Oh, put them
sure,
on.
Sure, 1 second.
Hi there.
Hey, how are you doing, Michael?
Doing fantastic. Yes, this is Michael.
My name is Tim Robertson. I host the MyMac podcast, mymac.com. Mm-hmm. We also have David Cohen from the UK on.
And hi, Michael.
So you're developing for the iPhone.
That's correct. We currently have two games that are web apps. They're web editions called Tic-Tac-Touch and Four in a Row Touch. And we started that in November of 2007, and they've been successful. We've had over 2 million games played so far. And
you're actually listed on the Apple's web apps.
That's correct.
Games.
That's
site.
Right.
Yep.
And we're taking those two games and we're making those native, and those will be available when the App Store launches in July.
And how much are they going to be, you said?
Tic-Tac-Touch is going to be 99 cents, and
awesome.
Four in a Row Touch is going to be $4.99, and that has online gameplay.
Oh, so you can play against other people as well.
That's correct. And we're not going to have – we thought about having monthly or yearly fees for the online, but we're not going to do that. It'll just be a one-time fix, $4.99, and then you can play online for as long as you want.
Well, if say a half million of those 20 million users that are going to be using the iPhone by the end of the year buy it at $5 each, and you get 75% of that.
70%, yes.
70%. You're going to have a nice house here soon.
Well, we'll see what happens. It's all very uncharted territory for everybody. And I've been talking with people at Apple, and the pricing is new. some other companies have struggled. Some larger companies, I've been told, have been struggling on what the price point should be. And so it'll be interesting to see what happens. We've just started.
Now, does Apple give you the ability to change price? If say you came out with something for $4.99, it's just not selling. Could you go in and make that a $2.99 game after a few months?
Yes, you can. You can go ahead and make changes. It's obviously, it's all very new, and how long it takes to make a change, there's a review process. That's an all unknown at this point.
Wow.
But theoretically,
it sounds
but
like
yes,
a lot of opportunity, though.
There is an amazing amount of opportunity. And what's amazing is we're about to see one of the world's largest retail stores in the world hit our industry. And it's very, very, very exciting. And it's very unknown. There's a lot of unknowns about this. And there's a lot of opportunities. And we're just really excited about this. And so.
Well, I was telling Bill that this puts you, as an independent game publisher, on the same level playing field as EA. Because marketing budget isn't going to mean anything when it's just a touch of a button on an iPhone.
That's exactly right, and it's very exciting. That's exactly right. Just like what the Internet did with a lot of companies in terms of marketing, that they have a presence, that's exactly what's happening with the App Store.
So EA and the big game publishers are going to be the next newspapers.
Well, I don't know about that.
I don't think so either, yeah, but still.
They have it equals the playing field.
Absolutely.
Mean, EA and Sega, they have some fantastic apps, and I some games, and I even plan to get them. At Flipside 5, what we're interested in doing right now is in casual games, which appeals not just to typically the action games for shooter games appeal to a certain demographic. Casual games appeal to a much wider demographic, kids, adults, teenagers, everybody. And so that's what we're going for right now. And we have other plans that we are in the pipeline. So we're really excited about what's taking place right now.
I'm looking at your website right now, and I got to say, I've got some younger kids myself, especially my four-year-old, and I can totally see her wanting to play that four in a row on my my iPod and, or my iPhone.
And on four in a row, we've just done some amazing core animation. Apple's been very helpful with helping out with the user experience. We've got some great core animation. When you play online, it uses the iPhone and iPod Touch core location facility so that you'll be able to see the country that your opponent is in, and you can send instant messages to your opponent, and it will translate automatically to the native language.
Oh. That's awesome.
Yeah, so we're really excited about that. We've had some great feedback.
Now, I see that you guys just started, really, in 2007, it says?
That's correct.
So what'd you do before?
So I've been in services. Personally, I've been doing object-oriented. I'm a throwback all the way to, in 1992, I was doing Next Step and doing consulting in that area. And then just got back with the Mac a couple of years ago after having done Next for so long. And then when the iPhone came out, I just fell in love with it, just like I did with the Mac in 1984. And so we've kind of gone head first in it. And we were doing consulting before. Now I'm doing product. And we got a lot of exciting things in the pipeline, but we're hoping that these games will be enough to feed our other product development.
Yeah, and feed your families, because I think you guys are going to make a lot of money with us.
Yeah, I hope so. We're really excited. I originally wrote the very first game, Tic Tac Touch, for my 6-year-old son, because he would say, "Dad, I'm bored," when he was in the back seat. And I originally wrote it for him, and he has been a fantastic product manager.
I bet.
So, for example, in 4 in a Row Touch, he had this. He said, "Dad, how about when I turn the iPhone upside down, the chips fall out?" And so that's exactly what we did.
That's awesome.
Yeah, it's very exciting.
How old is he now?
He's 6 years old. Well, so when I started,
He's perfect. He's the demographic that you definitely want to get feedback
from. And that's true. And adults just love it too. It's really a lot of fun.
It looks like a really cool game.
Yeah, make sure you click on those ads when you play the web app.
Yeah. I was going to say, my wife has spent hours and hours just playing the rubbishy free games in her Nokia phone. So something like this, I'll probably never speak to her again.
And, you know, I have to say, even though we've obviously are very proud of our work and what we've done, Apple has done a tremendous job with making it easy to develop such great technologies to use on the iPhone platform. It's really just been a pleasure to work with.
Well, thank you very much, Michael, for coming on. I'll make sure that we have a direct link from show 188 to FlipSide5, that's the number 5.com, and hopefully all of our listeners will take a look at your website, and when the Apple Store or the App Store launches, they'll all buy your game, and you'll become an instant millionaire, man.
Thank you very much.
Thanks, Michael.
All right, take care.
All right, it was kind of interesting being able to sit right next to these guys.
Yeah, I tell you what, man, I'm very, very impressed. You're sitting next to these smaller developers, and they've got some really cool-looking products. I think they're going to make a lot of money, Lee.
Yeah, I mean, it's funny because we're sitting in a pizza place, and my kids were getting bored because they didn't have crayons. So I went online, went to Google, did a search. I found Tic Tac Touch, and I was like, what's this? They love it. I mean, we play it all the time.
Do they?
Yeah.
It looks really cool. I think that's going to be worth a couple bucks to buy.
Yeah, definitely.
I mean, if you're in the car and the kid behind you is just going crazy like mine do all the time, hand them the iPhone and let them play a quick video game.
I really don't think people understand the enormity of this new platform. It's as big as Windows, as big as Mac. The iPhone iPod Touch platform is going to be probably the third major platform for software development.
Let me ask you a question, Lee. Does this kind of make you want to grab a couple of the developers there at AOL? Quit AOL and form your own startup company making software for the iPhone, because that's what I would want to do.
Yeah, if I were a little younger.
I hear you. The old
bootstrapping companies from scratch. Yeah, it's kind of tough, but
when you got a family like we do, that's something that's really not that's not an option. But
let me tell you, I am really excited with the new Cocoa Touch platform and all the stuff you can do on iPhone. This will be probably the biggest legacy Steve Jobs will leave the industry.
Yeah, bigger than the Macintosh.
Yeah, I think it'll be bigger.
Yeah, it may be. It may be. My only concern is how many competitors are going to come up with very similar products. I think a company you're really going to have to watch is Nintendo, even though traditionally they're not very fast on the uptake.
Yep.
When it comes to games and stuff like that, Nintendo is just a juggernaut. But I think that the App Store is really going to give them a run for their money. I don't think Nintendo really knows what's coming at them.
Yeah, there's going to be a lot of companies that are going to be redoing their business plan soon, I think.
Oh, I think so. What were you going to say, David?
I was just going to say, I think, you know, the one Apple has going for it with this is exactly what they did with the iPod sort of 5-6 years ago. They've not just, plenty of companies are doing these things as individual components. They, you know, you look at BlackBerry, for instance, they have a handheld, they have, you can get downloads for the BlackBerry, they have a software development kit for it, but what they don't do is integrate it all together in this incredibly seamless way and really make it exciting for people to use and to buy and to develop for. And really, that's what Apple's done, just in the same way as they did 5-6 years ago with the iTunes Music Store. They took all the separate components of doing something digital and online with music, and they turned it into this sort of perfect storm of something that turned into, you know, exploded overnight to something huge. And I think they've done it exactly again here with mobile software. And I agree with Lee. I think this is going to be enormous.
I do, too. I'm totally with Lee on it. What gets me is, you know, Apple is kind of getting a bad rep from the music labels, that Apple's saying that it has to be their way, and we can only sell music at this price, and then the music industry was saying the same thing. But yet, somehow, Apple comes up with this App Store, and they put all the power into the hands of the developers, not themselves. Yeah. And Apple is just basically a distribution company at this point. Well, of course, they make the hardware platform and the software to make the software, but really they're staying out of the way and they're letting these developers develop this really cool stuff and making a ton of money.
Yeah, the music industry really should be thanking Apple. I mean, Apple is making sure they don't make mistakes. I mean, they're trying to, you know, uniform pricing. Everything Apple's doing is trying to trust the consumer and look out for the people actually buying the stuff. The music industry should be very thankful for what Apple's helping them with.
Well, what I want to be thankful for is you, Lee, going ahead and against your better judgment, because I can tell you didn't want to do that. But that was really fun, man. That was pretty cool, hearing from two different developers that I didn't know anything about. And now I'm very excited, and I can guarantee everyone listening to the podcast is going to be excited about those programs well. And it probably helped them out because, you know, we're going to put the link in and people are going to learn about them.
It's just amazing. Anywhere you turn here, there's just amazing software coming out of anybody.
It's really cool. Well, we need to wrap up the show, but before we do, let's quickly touch upon what's going on up at the MyMac website. David, you've got a review of a 1.4 gigahertz processor upgrade for a G4. Who wants to upgrade a G4, man?
Well, I think people should think about it if they have a machine like that. You know, it's a very cheap way of getting a Mac that will run Leopard, will run it well, and will, you know, provided you're not doing anything particularly hardcore, will turn it into a useful machine again. And it's, you know, if you look at the percentage points of how much it costs against buying something like a Mac Mini, which is your entry level, I think it makes some sense.
Yeah. I think I'm going to let you go ahead and explain what this next article is about because you've got a lot of writing up on this post as well. How much did a $200 iPhone cost Apple from Scott? What's this about?
Well, basically,
because you disagree with Scott. You guys having this kind of this public little argument, which I absolutely love.
Yeah. I mean, Scott posted this article, and he was trying to, you know, dig behind the $199 headline cost of the 3G iPhone to say, well, actually, what does it cost, and what has Apple, in his view, given up in order to achieve that price? The impression I was getting was that he really feels Apple should have, has handed too much control back to AT&T by complying with the more standard subsidized phone model that companies like AT&T and offer, and of course it's that subsidy, the fact that AT&T are putting money into the deal to tie you into a contract that's enabled Apple to deliver the iPhone 3G at such a low price point. And he's going through and he's saying, well, you know, now we've lost activation through iTunes. They're going to have to be activated in the store. And I counted, say,
which, by the way, looks like that's not the case.
Exactly. I think there may be some tracking and maybe some an attempt to try and lock up your identity through the phone and maybe your credit card in the store, but I don't think it's full activation. Online purchasing appears to have disappeared in the US, though I noticed they are going to be available outside of the US online. So again, we're not really sure of the details around that at the moment. He's also has this point that Apple's losing revenue because they're not receiving this chunk of money out of the service fee every month.
I don't think Apple even cares about that. I think the App Store is going to be such a big deal that what they were making from AT&T is going to look like chump
change.
Well,
yeah, I mean, Apple has this deferred revenue model where they don't actually post to their accounts a lot of this money until much further in the financial cycle. They don't, so it's not as simple as saying, well, you know, Apple's only going to receive $400 or $500 per unit now, and they'll receive that at the time of purchase, and then never see anything from the phone again. It doesn't really kind of work like that. And also, you know, you've got to remember they're looking for volume, and they're also looking for the money they'll generate off the App Store. So, I'm confident that Apple would not do anything that would financially disadvantage themselves to try and do AT&T a favor. On that point, I'm not too worried. He points out as well that, you know, that there may be a problem if you want to buy an iPhone and put it under your Christmas tree. There are now limits on and penalties being talked about if you don't activate a phone within 30 days. And again, I came back to him and said, well, you know, that's always been the case with the subsidized phone model, and that must happen every year at Christmas time, and they must have a process for dealing with that. He points out as well that the service fees have gone up by $10, and, you know, that's driving the overall cost of the phone up. And yes, it is, but, of course, you are getting a 3G network for that, which is substantially faster than Edge.
Yeah, you're spending $10 more a month, but you're getting, what, four times the bandwidth?
Exactly, exactly. And also he's saying that there'll be a charge for iPod Touch users, and there may be perhaps charges in the future for future updates.
Yeah, but that's not Apple's doing. They don't want to have
exactly,
to charge
that's a legal thing, and I did suggest that he might want to take up with his congressman rather than complain at Apple.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So,
you know,
yeah, yeah, we
Go ahead, finish. I've got a question for you guys, though. When
we've
you're
been
done.
Going back and forth on this, and you know, I mean, he clearly has his view that maybe this isn't as great a deal for Apple as it might have been. My contention ultimately is I don't believe Steve Jobs would do anything he thought was disadvantaging Apple at all. So
no, I think he's got a track record of looking after Apple's best interests over the last
exactly,
decade.
Exactly. Yeah.
Question. Here's a question for you guys. We'll start with you, Lee. And I know I said I was going to wrap up the show, but this has been something that's been kind of nagging at me for a little while now. The whole idea of the Apple Store, or the App Store, I keep saying Apple, the App Store on the iPhone is really, really cool. It gives you quick access to different applications you can download immediately to your iPhone and start playing. Apple takes care of all the purchasing, blah, 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 blah. Why isn't there anything like that for the Mac? And somebody could say, yeah, well, the entire internet is that for the Mac.
Well,
but if there was an iTunes for the Mac, which was nothing but, let's just say games right now. It's just games. You fire up this application, not a web browser, because we know that you could do so much more with an embedded app rather than, HTML. Yep. Why isn't there something like that for the Macintosh, for games, for instance?
I think the biggest, easiest thing to understand is for games especially, if you buy them on the Mac, some of those games could be 3-4 gigabytes of data. And getting those through an online store is just really hard. And if you look at the majority of apps on the iPhone, they'll probably come under a megabyte. So it makes sense to sell them under the iTunes model. So it's a sheer thing bandwidth idea. So you know customers want to get instant gratification. They want to download the app and try it out and start playing it. But if it takes 3 or 4 days over a 768 kilobit per second DSL, I don't think the customers would be happy. So Apple and also managing the whole thing and managing all the different vendors and the payments, it's a tough thing. But they learned a lot, I think, from the music industry and being able to share revenue and all that stuff. So I think it makes perfect sense for especially a device that's where you could download an app over the air on the go when you need it.
And I think as well, Tim, MobileMe might well offer them an opportunity to do that in the future. Either have the applications actually up on as a service on the website, or alternatively have them up there, and the first time you use them, they do download to the Mac, and they could have a similar sort of model. I mean, there is a precedent for that. If you look at Steam, which is the service that Valve uses to distribute games like Half-Life 2 on the PC, it does actually work
a
little bit
like that.
Yeah, it's
becoming very, very popular.
Yeah, and it does work like that. Once you've bought your game and you've put your serial number in, then it downloads the latest version, it keeps you updated, and if you go to a different machine and log on to it, then it actually can download the whole game to you again. So,
and Steam will work. They use it with a lot of different vendors, not just their own software products. Like Rockstar now, you can buy, if you're on the PC, every version of the PC versions of, say, Grand Theft Auto. You can buy them immediately. Yeah. I think that this is something that really should come to the Mac. I wish somebody would support the Mac. There's a lot of, especially casual gaming stuff out there, that I think a lot of these freeware authors, or shareware authors, I should say, even if they only got 50% of what they're normally getting, they're going to hit a lot more people.
Tim, I think you have a probably good point there. I think Apple's probably going to go that way in the future when you see the two platforms kind of converge. I think there's going to be a future convergence of the iPhone and Mac platforms.
Yeah, I think they're laying the groundwork with the iPhone that's going to be able to carry over to a lot of different platforms in the future, including the Apple TV. That's something that no one's talking about right now. But let's be honest, the Apple TV is just a little computer, no?
Totally true.
Why couldn't you convert some of these iPhone games to work on the Apple TV, and Apple simply sells you a little game controller, a little wireless Bluetooth game controller for it? Why couldn't that work? And now they're in the same boat with Nintendo and Microsoft and Sony. But it would have to definitely be more casual type of stuff, at least initially. I think that's something that would work, too. That's a huge market that's just sitting there waiting to be plundered. Well, I think we took up enough of our listeners' time this week. I think this was a great podcast. Thank you very much, David, for being on this week. I know it's very late there.
Always a pleasure.
And Lee, thank you very much for coming on. I know you're in San Francisco. You took a couple hours to be on the show, and just turning around and grabbing a couple developers. You know, I knew I could talk you into it, but I could tell you didn't want to.
Bill
actually sent me an email already. I'm looking at my email box since I talked to him, and he already sent me an email. We got to get him on the show. He was real interesting, and I like talking to Michael as well.
Yeah, it's great just meeting new guys, and I got a T-shirt out of it too, Tim.
Oh, cool. See, there you go. I got your T-shirt. Which one?
Flipside 5, guys.
I knew that's the one you got. I kind of heard you in the background a little bit going, my kids really like your stuff.
I mean, it's amazing. I'm going to tell my kids I found the guy who made this tic-tac-toe game.
Yeah, absolutely. That's cool. That's really cool. Okay, we'll be back next week. We'll see who's on the show. Are you going to be here next week, Lee?
Yes, I will.
Okay. And David, I take it you're going to be with us again?
Yes.
We'll find out what Sam Levin's going to be doing from Spain. That ought to be interesting. He said he's going to call me on the phone. We'll see how that works. And hopefully we'll get Guy. I think he'll be back home next week. I know he's in Florida, and we were having a lot of connection problems, which is why he's not on this segment of the show. But I do want to thank one more time Bill Dudney. It was great talking to him. Michael Sanford. And, of course, Jason Zumwalt. He did, the beginning of our show, the Roman voice from Grand Theft Auto 4. That was very generous of him. Check him out up on MySpace, and we'll be back next week.
Thanks for downloading the MyMac.com podcast. You can subscribe to this podcast at our RSS feed at MyMac.com or by visiting the iTunes Music Store's podcast section. Please send all feedback to mymacpodcast@gmail.com. And thanks for listening to the mymac.com podcast.